Pero no vamos a trabajar. Es que no,
see Don Lane using the dragging bureaucratic influence. Oh, we can't do it before this issue because of how the customary procedures go. In fact, he's even wrong about that. And you'll hear later that the Homeless Issues Task Force decided it was going to try to put it on the agenda anyway, that was the point, to get the city council to take some real action so that, in a way, I guess the Homeless Issues Task Force is wondering, is the city council jerking them around? They shouldn't wonder. They should know. Of course, I knew the minute they sat down 5 months ago that that's exactly what was happening. But it takes people new to the game some time to learn what's going on. Some take longer than others. And indeed, you know, one likes to believe when the city council says, oh, we're spending $10,000 on a homeless issues task force, that they mean to actually do something and to pay some serious attention to the recommendations that have come out of it. What they did, in fact, was they planted a mole in the middle of the task force, Don Lane, who you can hear saying now, oh, well, you can't really get it on the agenda, and, you know, we can't really do this. Now you hear the task force taking the ball into their own hands and proceeding anyway.
And then if it's done, so if we get it by a letter, it just doesn't seem like it'll get in the pipeline to happen that way. And if we do oral communications, it automatically means that the council can't, it's an item that isn't on the agenda, that can't be taken action on, and it's, in fact, is rolled over to the first meeting in January. If that's accepted, which I don't think people should accept easily, but if you do think that might be true, then it makes, then...
And what Don Lane is saying, and we have a break in the tape here because the tape wasn't fully recorded properly, but you're going to hear it resume in a moment. What Lane is saying that is, because we can't get it on the agenda, then let's just make it a part of the midterm report in January. He, in essence, is attempting to, in his own way, sabotage the entire force and emotion of the group. At least that's my perspective. But that doesn't happen on this occasion. Instead, we have this. As soon as the tape resumes, that is.
It's also possible that some event could happen in the next 3 or 4 days as an emergency, like a death, that would have a catalytic effect in the city council, make it an emergency item on the agenda if they decided to do so. So, although Don is probably right, it's not necessarily the case that would be true. Also, and again, I'd advise you that this could be one of those items that goes as one of our reports on the back of the agenda, which I keep thinking has to be accessible from this body somehow without some elaborate procedure by the city council. And particularly since Keith has been here and there's been some interaction, that might be a second avenue. Therefore, I can agree with Laura, I think it should become both as a priority and as essentially it's an emergency recommendation. It talks about emergency shelter, of course, what it's all about.
I guess the most salient point for me is that, I'm sure. sure futile. I'm likely to be futile at the first, but it will not power the council suspend enforcement, because right now there isn't enough shelter. Right now there are real dangers. Right now there is bad weather, and we depend on people, you know, being out there and finding other ways of surviving during the winter. And just to me, I get really hung up on just the catch 22 that we've got people in. And I'd like to see us just say again, I know it's repeating what we've already said, request a suspension enforcement and, you know, attempt to proceed towards some resolution of how can this be done in some other way.
Can I
just
call a question?
And this is Marilyn Weaver, a formerly homeless person who also worked for a year at the Homeless Services Center and actually has been a critic of Ken Cole, the man who introduced the resolution, the vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, the voice you just heard before, the male voice, but who stands four square with him on this issue. Now speaking is Thomas Levitt. Actually, I'm not sure which Thomas it is. There are two of them, but let's see who it is. Yes, it is Thomas Levitt, one of the two homeless representatives on this group. The other homeless representative you can't hear because he was completely hoarse. He was sleeping out in the cold. His blankets had been taken the night before. He was completely laryngitis ridden, and I guess Becky Johnson spoke for him at other parts of the meeting. We actually got him a sleeping bag after the meeting, but he was able to kind of follow the conversation, and he voted in favor of the resolution, as did Thomas, who now speaks, Thomas Levitt. Thomas Levitt actually makes a suggestion that even hardens the resolution. He suggests a second resolution which denounces and deplores City Council's refusal to act on prior Homeless Issues Task Force resolutions.
I think it's good as it stands, but it would be nice if the City Council would have something delivered to along with it, that they could vote yes, that they could actually legally vote yes or no one right then and there, that would actually establish a sub-basin. Because, you know, if they don't have that, it's not going to be formulated, you know, at that meeting, and it's not going to happen. There's no chance it's
going to
happen until, you know, January.
Can I accept your comment as a friendly amendment and suggest that we add to my motion number D of our report, which is add a clause, request in this motion that they add a clause to the camping ordinance and declare that there's a shelter emergency and that the parks director has to work out the details. So part of the hang-up is that we never quite get to the point of working out all the details. And the lack of details becomes the excuse for not doing anything. You know, I'm just trying to creatively think of ways that we break out of that cycle for a minute.
Okay. I think that's a good idea.
Can we put this in the form of a request for emergency action by the council?
Is Mel Nadelsky speaking for the first time. So it has moved now from a request to put it on the agenda as a, Mel Nunez actually, as an emergency item, as an ordinary item on the agenda to make it an emergency item, which means actually normally that's the kind of item you put on after there's only you've reached the point where it's only a few days before the council and you're within the 72-hour Brown Act period and you have to have an emergency reason, a finding and an agreement by five members to put it on the on the council's agenda, but it's an important suggestion in this context because, we'll see later why this is an important suggestion. In fact, well, to briefly summarize, at the there were three people who were not present at this meeting. One of whom became very concerned that at city council meeting later that she hadn't been properly informed, that this was some sort of activist coup, and she began essentially sabotaging the effort in the eyes of some. And I'm playing this tape actually for the benefit of the entire community so people can hear what actually was said at the Homeless Issues Task Force meeting. And you can hear that the Homeless Issues Task Force has, in essence has decided it is an emergency situation and if necessary should be the basis for an emergency resolution, which means that at any time throughout the City Council meeting on Tuesday, any member of the City Council could have put forward the resolution that they accept the Homeless Issues Task Force recommendation, and it would have had to have been discussed, or at least it would have died for lack of a second, one of the two. And no council member did that. Continuing to listen to the Homeless Issues Task Force discussing probably the most important resolution that it had throughout its existence, not even limited to the camping ban repeal, which was a broader resolution, because this asked for immediate and emergency action.
Emergency usually means that it has to be done within 72 hours of the time. If you're not prepared to address it, simply keep sure you say, please put this on the agenda, that they have the power to do it without making an emergency action. An emergency needs five votes instead of four. And it does take effect immediately if it's an ordinance change, right, then? That's the significance of an emergency action.
I'm not sure how that works. My reason for suggesting that isn't so much of the technical difference between an emergency item and a non-emergency item, but more
the reality.
A way that it's the punch that it has presented that way, and if we're going to couple this thing with trying to get this in the paper, then that would also.
And here again, you see the first mention of the Homeless Issue Task Force is realizing that it's to the community they must appeal, that the council is deaf, dumb, and halt on the issue of basic rights for homeless people, that they have to get to the Sentinel and to the media. It's unfortunate, of course, that this was not carried through on, because as those of you who read the Sentinel know, there has been no stories, not a peep, about this Homeless Issues Task Force resolution, even though it was repeatedly referred to at the City Council meeting on the 14th, and was the subject of a special secret meeting by Sugar and his supporters 2 days before for an hour and a half in the city manager's conference room down at City Hall on Sunday night.
Okay. You mean emergency in the ordinary normal sense of the word?
What? Okay. It's good to have some sentence to go to.
The last few cons you made have been coming off of the council. Thank you.
Me.
Yeah.
And there it was, the unanimous vote. And actually, the conversation that follows is instructive, too, because it wasn't just set aside as some sort of bureaucratic item to gather dust on the shelf or to be sent to Don Lane to then go to the tomb, the burial ground of all these resolutions in the city manager's office somewhere. Rather, the task force began to discuss how to actually take action on it, and they decided to appoint several people to come in and to the office of Keith Sugar and request him the very next day to put the item on the agenda. There was discussion of having it brought up at oral communications. There was discussion of some kind of even of a press conference or a meeting with Sentinel reporters. all that followed in the tape that we're going to play a little bit more of, but because of our limited time here on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and if you want to call in, our number is 427-3772 at 96.3 FM. We're not going to hear as much as we might. If you're interested in this issue, however, I'm pointing out David Silva, you may remember, the father of the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, has pledged $500 to open up and reopen the campaign to get the Sleeping Ban Initiative on the ballot. And he wants to know if other people are willing to match that or want to do that. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave a message on the line if you want to help do that. And please, please call Mayor Sugar right now at 420-5020 and tell him, support your own homeless issues task force resolution. Call a special session of the city council meeting before Christmas. Thank you very much. Here's a little bit more of that homeless issues task force meeting.
Could we have the same concerns on that sort of prefacing set as we discussed it?
I think I would rather have it from what we said before in the preamble to the first motion we passed.
Well, I think we should put it into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So all of these informing comments.
I was just saying that I'm looking at the previous motion, it didn't really happen. I remember even the big camping.
I remember about the camp, the original vote.
Oh, which vote was the vote? That was to suspend.
Do away with the camping ordinance in its entirety, which would have done what my other motion
was. I just want to clarify, did you guys agree to put it in the form of recess for emergency action to cancel, or was that separate, or how does that fit in?
This is my hunch. Tom, if you can clarify as well. That could be the title that we put on the document that we send to the council that has this motion in it. In other words, we don't concern ourselves with the city's technical definition of their concern with emergency. We are telling them this is an emergency.
Okay.
What has occurred with the previous motions that have been forwarded to the city council? Have they been on the agenda? Has Tony been
prepared?
We
were
allowed to present a batch of things and and that could be part of the compelling reason, though, and maybe there's a little reasoning for that. So we haven't heard that from our other recommendations.
So what do to follow up on that, what is our reaction going to be if we deliver this and we continue to be treated with, like, just silence?
I think that's too big for our task force to go into. They are appalled to know that stuff goes on and that
that in many instances the city council is very aware of what's going on and not doing anything about it, even when these issues have been brought to them. They have to push them on the rug and not address these issues and let them continue for years and years and years.
Can we have Father from Lucy? We also have some other agenda items.
Okay, Peter has asked what to be done, you know, in terms of protest to have some influence on city council, and that's kind of a subject to...
And here's a remarkable point. You heard two voices there for a while in that tape. You heard Marilyn Weaver, the homeless service center worker, formerly homeless herself, saying, we've got to address the community. And then you heard a different male voice talking more quietly. That was the voice of Peter Eberle of the Downtown Association, who many consider to be a very conservative anti-homeless force, but one of the 10 unanimous votes for this Homeless Issues Task Force resolution. He was actually talking to me about what can the council do in terms of any kind of respectful protest. What can the task force do? And I begin to talk about that at this point.
So I understand the question you asked, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of closing that.
Traditionally around this time there have been protests. Last year there was a lot of people came to the city council with high hopes and then of course got dashed. But a lot of people came and stuff did get on the agenda as a consequence of protests starting to roll. Byers, which I think she was forced to put something on the agenda, which was this task force to examine the camp ordinance and examine it off into the distance. But my suggestion, if this group wants to do something, is to get to form an ad hoc subcommittee to work out the details of this, to work on it, because you can't do it here, everyone's kind of tired, to arrange to go to Sherwood probably tomorrow and say, we'd like to have something on the agenda. You and Cronin last year proposed something. If you need any less, you know, and they'll say, well, we will not succeed. We'll say, well, success will come in educating the community, as we're trying to do. That's what we need to do. If he proposes to base your strategy on whether he says yes or no. If he says no, then you simply hold up a more public press conference, which you've presented anyway. If it says yes, you deal with him as part of the group, in essence, doing that. If you're proposing an immediate change that is, you know, of some sort, it requires a couple of people to go to Sugar tomorrow morning to negotiate with him, talk to him, and see if you can get this item on the agenda. That's right. And then start organizing, a lot of people come to the city council on the 14th to support it.
I don't know if this should be included.
This is Thomas Levitt again, speaking of the homeless people, the two homeless people.
I would like some form of communication be made to the city council from us stating our concern, dismay, annoyance at the fact that we have forwarded multiple times communications which were urgent, which have not been reacted on. Communications which were not only urgent, but were on an emergency basis, you know, action which was, you know, we were denied immediately, no reaction from the city council was received. So it, you know.
Yeah.
Is that a motion?
I guess a motion that,
I can read what you wrote. To the city council, stating concerns with communications about emergency issues. Why is it not being responded to in an appropriate manner? Because they did kind of respond, but what you said was not responded to at all.
Is there a second on this as a motion, or is Thomas is prepared to move the motion?
Second.
Can we see? Oh, I'm. So they have.
I think it's okay, Thomas, this is my own question. Mr. Chair, I just have to be super kind of way aware. I don't mean to sound stupid. I hope you're suggesting this is its own motion and not a piggyback for Tim's motion.
Yes, I'm suggesting it's a separate motion.
Yes, it's very good. So discussion going on Thomas's Robert?
The motion, Don probably remembers a similar situation happening in 1988 when there was massive protests around the issue of the camping ban. He was the lone person who voted for a resolution in 89, actually supporting it. But I think that when we do this, we have to keep pressing on with this. I mean, I think that this has an impact if we continue in our own private venues to go to people to look for ways of bringing the issue up, whether it's in the media, whether it's for the council. I think it's good that what we're doing. And I think you need, as I said, we need a subcommittee. Some members should make a motion to be a subcommittee.
Try and get your comments to the motion and we're actually having to
vote.
I'd like to expand my motion to also specifically cite the dates that I am, which we communicated.
Okay.
Just so the city council, you know, it's on the record that, you know, 3 weeks ago we did this, 2 weeks ago we did this, whatever, you know, so that it's obvious, you know, it's an emergency item which has not been dealt with for a month, which probably, which clearly isn't being dealt with on the 14th, because we're introducing a new item, and which, so therefore, 2 months from now, when the earliest it could possibly have been dealt with would have been 2 months after our recommendation.
The hour's late, and we just passed the motion. We're presuming now that the motion will not be heard, you know, will not be responded to, which I certainly can adopt that sentiment, because that's where I'm most feeling that frustration. But I really would support something at a future date on this, but to have just passed this one motion, I'd rather put what little energy we have into some of those suggestions that Robert made about focusing a small group of people, requesting an immediate meeting with new mayor, and just see if we can get around the agenda. Now, if we can't get on the agenda, we can take this matter up later in terms of telling them how pissed we are, you know, because it's legitimate.
So you can be there.
And also mentioning that in the interim, since those things were presented to the city council, that there were some deaths, there were some incidents, and what stating what happened since those things were presented to them. And I might, what happened since then that could have been avoided had they taken some action in some way.
It was clearly
I don't know exactly how to do this, because we're still
discussing
that motion. We're still trying to vote that motion.
Yeah.
But I have another motion to make that's different.
You could vote. It's part of the discussion that might influence the vote.
Yeah,
but
it's probably not that Robert and Kim's suggestions of how someone speaks to Keith about getting the motion from the general, the motion in general.
Do you want to vote up or down this motion? It doesn't mean we'll come back to this time of year.
But it'll be in the middle.
I think that it will be back tomorrow. Let's just say tomorrow's kind of thing, so I want to make sure that these people are informed. So maybe to call a question on all these motions that we have.
Or ask them to withdraw the motion.
I think perhaps the motion could be melted into Ken's motion as a sort of the secondary thing that says. Itemizes the deaths in bringing the issue to Keith and to the council members who want to put this item on the agenda. Suggests that we are concerned that previously the city council seems to have taken a little notice of these things. It doesn't have to be put as harshly as that, insofar as we are requesting them right now to take a notice, but also acknowledges that on these particular dates, we brought these resolutions forward. We couldn't even get the item on the packets of the agenda. Finally, we got this one, you know, one deal, this one brief presentation period. And this motion could become a part of the process of Kim and maybe Lucy's going to, or just decides to go to Keene tomorrow and get this item on the agenda as an intent. This could be a secondary part of it, if you understand what I'm
I think it seems to me like it's supposed to be support for emergency motions. I think sort of logistical and not the
Has a motion already passed?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's, it would be a separate motion.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I restate my motion, I guess, at this point? Which is, okay, to simplify it. One, express the task force's dismay at the non-reaction of the City Council to previous emergency recommendations and communications. Itemize those recommendations and communications. That's it.
Okay. I'm going to call a question. All of these things are Thomas' suggestion, raise your hand. It doesn't have a date on it.
Oh, it's not a date. Have it in readiness for the future? Yeah.
But for the future, I would mean. Okay. Okay, I would say it again.
And Tomas's recommendation that there be dismay and specific concern about a particular series of recommendations that the Homeless Issues Task Force has presented, which he described as emergency recommendations ignored by the City Council, forwarded to the Council at a date uncertain. And there's more to this tape, too, but we don't have time for it, because what I want to do is play you some important interviews that give you the real reason on the streets why all this stuff is happening in these august committee meetings. Here's an interview with Joe Barker, as promised before, after he had been beaten several weeks ago. This is the man who had a bottle broken across his forehead, his ribs broken in a neo-Nazi attack back in April by figures dressed in black who entered the area where these homeless people were sleeping. Four of them shouted, "Police!" up against the wall, or something to that effect, and then began beating people. And he was the one who was most badly beaten, taken to the hospital. Eventually, one of the assailants, Aaron Birch, was convicted of assault and is now in jail in the same pod as Steve Argue, the man who was jailed for punching a police officer in defense of a woman with a child in the May 22nd protest against the war in Yugoslavia. Here's Joe Barker talking about the recent beating. Talking to the survivor, Joe Barker. It's about 1:30 at the Homeless Services Center. Hey, Joe.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. The word is that you were the second, or maybe the first, of two casualties last night that were hit by troll busters.
Me, you know, the guy last night, and me the night before.
Can I get a picture of your injury? Can I get a picture?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you mind if I take a photo as
well? No, go ahead.
You're getting pretty famous here, Joe. Don't let it go to your head.
So I'm trying to hide.
You just got back from Dominican where you got some treatment for your injuries.
Yeah.
What exactly are those injuries?
They kicked me right here in the chin, and
you're pointing the gloves out of your face.
Yeah, and they five stitches. And then they tried to kick me in, you know, where?
Genitals?
And I moved this way, and they got me right there.
In the right thigh.
Yeah. Okay. And they kicked me in the chest here.
Did these people know you, and did you know them?
No. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I went to the bench. I missed the bus again, like last time. Mm-hmm. Once it closed that gate, I can't get my sleeping bag.
And the bus that Joe Barker is talking about is not a city bus, but is the shelter bus to the armory, which runs at 3:34, 4:30, and after that, you are out of luck, because you cannot walk up to the armory or get your own transportation up there. That is considered to be inappropriate.
I believe that's the case, although actually with us, we have an expert just coming from the Homeless Services Center board meeting. We're going to briefly interrupt this very important Barker, this interview with Joe Barker, to get a kind of a brief update from Becky Johnson. Hi, Becky. Let's make sure we got the right... Go ahead.
Hi, Robert.
And what's the story on that? Can you walk up to... You can't walk up to the Armory, but can you be driven up there late?
I actually requested of the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors, they had their meeting today, their monthly meeting, that there was a concern that people who work need a late night bus up to the Armory. No, you can't walk up there. That's not allowed. There's been some discussion about getting a late night bus. In fact, I believe Catherine Byers promised that a year ago December.
So what Joe Barker is saying is that he was he missed the last bus, so he was forced to sleep outside illegally, facing a $54 fine, and in this case, beatings. And I guess I want to play the rest of this tape, but is there anything you quickly want to say about this?
Yeah, there's no money in the budget for a late-night bus, and even though I brought it up, nobody made a motion to try to see about getting that. So I don't think there's going to be a late-night bus in the near future.
Wait a minute. Now, do I understand that... promises of Keith Sugar that there would be some action on a late night pickup by the Armory if the money could be found, and apparently
it's a very tight budget. They really don't have a lot of wiggle room. They're running the buses to the existing services that they have, and there's just no room to expand them in the current budget.
Well, it sounds like Mayor Byers' comment about the homeless population generally and why there can't be sleeping zones. There's just no room for them. Really a Christmas sentiment. Let's continue with the Christmas time beating of Joe Barker.
So then I went to the beach, and I went to Julia and Vice me, in case of emergency, you can stay at the hotel there. So she wasn't home, so I went down by the beach, and I was underneath the pier, and I was sitting down by the pier. And then I heard girls going, laughing and yelling, so I got out and investigated. And then before I turned around, they were blaming me for chasing them or something. And the guy goes, is this the guy that did it? And they go, no, we don't know if it was him or not. It's dark. And I go, well, I was just sitting here. And I go, I don't know. I go, you know, talk to me first and explain to me what I did, and I'll talk. They didn't want to explain it. They didn't want to do it. They just pointed. The girl said no, and they said, well, you're going to get trouble anyway. We're going to kick your ass. And I'm, whoa, excuse me? What did I do? I'm sitting there minding my own business. And here they come. So I said, I don't want any trouble. I started to walk away. And I picked up my backpack, and I tripped. So as soon as I fell to the ground, they began kicking me. And then I go, okay, that's it. I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm calling the police. As soon as I said that, they just ran off. But they just got me a few times this time. It wasn't that bad.
Do you think these were the same people that did it last time?
No, but it looked... It's very similar.
How do they look?
Bald hair, big.
And did they seem... I mean, I know last time you said that these guys were in black, and they said...
No, these guys were not in black. They were... First they threw sand at me. They were like, you know, like Indian running.
But the previous people were in black?
Yeah, they were in black.
You were of course, hit in the back of an area where you were sleeping in a residential area.
Yeah, it was like a little art studio that was abandoned.
And that was like in April or May.
Yeah.
And you were attacked by a group of four or five, apparently skinheads.
Yeah, and they were skinheads.
And they shouted, "Police, get up!" or something, and other strange
police. And I figured, well, I'm not going to do anything. Before I knew it, he said, "Prisoner against the wall," and I realized I was in the Santa Cruz police.
Prisoner against the wall. Right?
Yeah.
Now these guys, how many of them were they?
Just two.
These were, but you think that they were the same height and build? They might have been the same people.
Same height, the same build, yeah. One little one, one big guy. You know Big Sean? Like that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I told him
But it probably wasn't Big Sean.
No. But I was surprised, you know. It's like, second time I missed the bus, same incident.
You got to catch that bus, man.
No, I'm moving in somewhere, hopefully.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back to work.
So you then... These guys, when you said I'm calling the police after they kicked you in the face,
yeah.
I tried to get you in the balls and kicked
right.
you in the leg, they then ran off?
Yeah, they ran off, yeah.
And what did you do then?
I just walked out here to the shelter.
Which is quite a walk.
Yeah.
And what did you do? What happened then?
Oh, then I just stayed here till the morning.
And did you get any kind of medical treatment?
No, I went to Ameline the next day.
And you haven't filed a police report about this?
Yeah, they have to file it. And then I got chewed out with the officer. He goes, oh, Joe Barker. Oh, you don't prosecute. I already know what I'm doing here. I'm like...
And that's because in the last case, you could not definitively identify
exactly
Aaron Birch.
He goes, I don't know what I'm doing here. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to work with us. I go, that's not my job. That's your job.
Mm-hmm. And here we hear the significant repeated case of police officers discouraging reports from homeless people about beatings. The other individual who is beaten in this two-day period was a man named Carl. And Carl himself reports that he was beaten out by Mission Street. We played that, actually played that report before. And actually, we might play it again. But he describes how he was approached by two youths out there at Mission Street 7-Eleven who wanted him to buy liquor for them. He wouldn't, so they set upon him, bloodied him, beat him up. He then came into the store, called the police. When the police arrived, they refused to take an assault report, instead arrested him as drunk, and he was released hours later into the pouring rain at 1:30 without charges. Here we have Joe Barker telling us that the police officer was giving him trouble about filing a police report when he himself had been injured to the extent where he needed 5 stitches. It seems to be a continuing practice. At least 2 instances happened within a total of 24 to 48 hours. And from presumably 2 different sets of officers. No doubt the police chief is scurrying to deal with this situation.
Now I feel like a criminal. I feel like you don't like me. And have a nice day.
Well, I got some misinformation on this flyer. I'm glad that we talked to you because you can. I'll give you a copy of it.
Okay.
We thought it was at Cathcart and Front Street. It actually apparently was. What was the location of the attack?
Down by the pier.
Under the wharf?
Down there at the wharf. Yes, a good place to hide, but not anymore.
I guess not. If you come out of hiding to hear what's going on, you may get a foot
exactly.
in the balls or a foot in the face.
No, here I am being concerned why these people were yelling. Like, can they find out? They were just like fooling around. And for me, for my curiosity, I thought something was going on, then I get blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in New York City, the lady's getting raped, everybody in the window's watching this, everybody's watching her get stabbed and cut their throat, everybody closed the curtain as they come out. Did you see anything? We saw nothing. Everybody, you know, the concerned people don't want to help because they're scared, and the ones that are not scared, well, they just close the window and ignore the problem.
Now, have you heard of any further assaults in the last week or two?
Last night, somebody here got it.
Right.
At the west side.
We heard about that. That was Kurt who got...
Yeah.
Carl, sorry, yeah. Not Kurt.
He said 4 of them attacked him.
And he said these were youth, but the most frightening thing was the police came and they arrested him instead of going after the youth. Yeah.
Just because he had a little beer, so, you know, he's a criminal now. Now he'll be thought as a criminal.
You think that what officer took the report and made the comment about you that you were...
Oh, the same one that took the last report at the hospital. I forgot her name.
It was a woman?
Yes, a woman. I think she was just here a minute ago.
Did she have red hair?
Blonde hair.
Blonde hair.
Yeah, she's short.
Mm-hmm. Not a sergeant, but an officer?
Yes, she's an officer.
Right.
It starts with a B.
Bayani, maybe?
No.
Bies?
A woman.
Yeah.
No, I don't quite remember her name, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't Roscoe.
Not a risk.
No.
Where are you going to sleep tonight?
We're going to sleep with Bren in the hotel now.
Wait, we want to tell the Trollbusters, so come on, give us a location. We're going to use you as bait.
I wish I was, but I ain't, so I'm not.
Gotcha.
Okay. No, it's not safe now. I'm beginning to believe that. It's like I talked to you. You heard about Little Ray, right?
I mean, Ray Stitt?
Yeah.
Well, I heard that Ray, you know, of course, he drowned like 3 weeks ago.
Right.
But we also heard that he was beaten a week before that. He was attacked.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that?
Well, I've been talking to everybody, right? And somebody said that somebody attacked him and he went back and revolted. And he
what?
Revolted.
Yeah.
Went and took action on his song. He says he was not going to put up with it. So from what I heard from one person is that he went over there and cut their tents up. And these were people that do these things, you know? And I guess...
You're saying indicate take drugs?
Yeah. And so they have no feelings to themselves or anybody anymore. And I think there was a little war going on with the people of the river and something going on. And I think maybe he was either pushed or held under. I'm not going to say, but...
Well, Becky, you talked to the coroner, and he didn't indicate there were any signs of ill play, but you didn't, or foul play, but you didn't really ask about that specifically.
No, I didn't ask if there were signs of trauma. He said that the cause of death, according to the autopsy, was asphyxiation due to drowning.
We're talking about Ray Stitt.
Yeah, and from another witness who saw them pulling the body out, it says it was about 3 feet deep in the area.
Hmm. So, where did you hear this information about that Ray went and cut off the tents and there was some sort of a war going on?
Well, it was from one of the street people that hang out.
And you think this person is a knowledgeable source?
Oh, yeah. Because they're out all night collecting cans.
I see.
That's their job, so they keep their eyes open and everything, ears open very well.
So, are these people still at large then who killed Ray, you think? If they killed him?
Yeah. They were, I think something funny was happening, because Ray was not a person that would have violence or end up in a situation like that. I think there were, something was going on. I'm not sure.
Do you know if he could swim?
No, I don't.
he was drowning in, 3 feet of water?
Yeah, that was very suspicious of me. Another thing is that he always stuck to his own territory. You know, that's not his territory, that area.
Really?
Yeah.
How long did you know Ray?
I've known him for 10 years, or 11 years now since I've been here in Santa Cruz.
You know that he was attacked back in June at Harvey West Park, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
And he pushed off his attackers. He came in here with his arms bleeding during a Huff meeting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he filed a report to the police department. Had he been attacked between June and that last incident you mentioned, which, by the way, where did that incident happen, the week before he drowned, do you know?
I think that way by the river, up further north.
Like that, because I've heard every different things, that it was downtown or something.
No, I talk to the people that hang out over there just in my own investigation. See, you know, because I like the guy. He minded his own business. All he wanted to do was find a place where he can read his book. He read. He was from Fullerton. I was in Anaheim, so we became very close friends. Cause he lived like Orange Thorpe, and I lived on Ball Road at State College in Anaheim. So we knew exactly everything we talked about. Plus, he was a Christian. He was an alcoholic, but we all have our own problems. But in way deep in his heart, he loved everybody. He respected things. He was honorable, except for his alcoholic problem. And his family lived here. He used to go visit them. And he never caused any problems, except when he drank. And then you'll get a little bit ornery and bitchy, whatever. But it's a disease, so you can't blame the individual for that. We all have our little hang-ups. But I never saw him to be violent or anything. And after all these years, like me, I'm not violent, but someday I might pick up a stick and hit him back. But that's against my principles, so I can't do that. So I think the whole thing was very suspicious. I have different friends who go around at night and investigate it, and there are heartless people out there that don't care for themselves, so why would they care for another human life?
How is the police department handling this in your view?
In my view, they're beating around the bush. And they're ignoring the true facts because they're closing their eyes because they can't really do anything. How are they going to do anything? You know, increase the police? That's not going to help.
What about a safe place for homeless people to sleep?
Well,
that's
about the best place. You know, you're hiding around and trying to beat the bush. And then if you miss the bus, let's say if I go back to work, I get stuck outside every day. Because before I used to work and I get off all winter, last winter I got up at 5 o'clock, go to work, get off the bus, go downtown, I work in San Jose all day setting heaters, and then I would walk up to the armory. But now you can't do that. They won't let you go up there unless you go in the bus.
So, in other words, you cannot walk up to the armory now as you could last year?
No. And well, I understand why, because it's dark and you can get run over going up that road. But I think if there was a place where you can just actually go there and sit there, you know, it would be great. Because, you know, like, even if you're a male with other people, remember over there, I was with three guys.
Right.
They still got it. So it doesn't matter how many are you, there's more coming anyway. So you never know. And then, you know, if they're going to have weapons, belly clothes, whatever.
Bottles.
Does it seem to be the same group of people who are doing this, or is it different? I mean,
it's the same attitude of people.
The same attitude.
It's this, I'm important, I'm better, you're a piece of garbage, so I don't care about you. And that comes because of the breakdown of our society. Is people, broken families, the mother and father don't teach them about God, no respect. When God is out of the question, the world's gone haywire. Look at the war around the planet, hatred. The disbelief in God and the Great Spirit, there's no home, TV, violence, radio, violence, movies, violence, cartoons, violence. So when you have a society that's raised on violence and all you can be, people that come back, they make killers heroes. They tell you on TV, be all you can be, 6 feet under. What a thing to tell an 18-year-old, you know? And it's part of our society that it's good to kill, it's good to fight, it's good to argue. And if all that was stopped, you can go back to the regular base, honor thy friend, respect the God and the universe, but since now we only respect material objects and money is more important, we have misguided.
Well, in this case, we also respect Joe Barker. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, you're welcome.
And that was, I think, a very illuminating interview with the man who has been hit at least twice this year, so serious enough to put him in the hospital. He's still got good humor, and he's still speaking publicly on issues after also problems with the police, because he didn't want to finger Aaron Birch. He felt he had made a private understanding with Birch that he had forgiven the man. I don't know how wise that was for the community. But he reported that the police jailed him on marijuana charges and held him to pressure him to testify against Aaron Birch, who was convicted anyway, although got a significantly lighter sentence, as I mentioned before, than someone like Steve Argue. Well, Birch was part of a gang that smashed a bottle over Barker's forehead and broke his ribs in the middle of a nighttime assault. Steve Argue, in broad daylight, threw one punch to a police officer in defense of a woman and a child. And apparently that merited twice the sentence that Birch got. In the studio with us, however, is Becky Johnson, who just came from the Homeless Services Center. She has an update for us. We only have 10 minutes left. So zip to your phones and call the mayor while we're talking, 420-5020. Tell him to immediately call an emergency session of City Council before Christmas so that we can get the Homeless Issues Task Force resolution for safe zones on the agenda for discussion immediately. Go ahead, Becky.
Dangerous out there, Robert, too. A lot of homeless deaths. We've had 5 homeless deaths in the last 3 months. The Homeless Services Center is planning a memorial on December 21st. That's next Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. This is sort of sponsored by the National Coalition on Homelessness. It's sort of a national day to recognize the toll homelessness takes. And as part of that, they've been compiling a list of homeless deaths in the area. And so far, they've documented 109 deaths in the last 5 years. That's staff member Mike Bustos who's doing that, who also announced that he's resigning at tonight's meeting, and we'll miss him because he's been doing a good job out there. You were talking about the Armory earlier, and council member Tim Fitzmaurice, who's taken a personal interest in the Armory somewhat belatedly. Tim really hasn't taken much interest in homeless issues at all until just recently. And he's going to be up at the Armory the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday delivering food. And now they're organizing to have some sort of formal food service at the Armory starting next week. So those who are thinking about going to the Armory, you can actually plan. You don't have to starve yourself for 12 hours just to get a place to sleep on the floor. Community House, the Page Smith Community House, that is at full capacity, but for the first time in a very long time, they've pretty much exhausted their waiting list. So if there are people who are interested in getting housed at the Page Smith Community House, now is the time to go out and fill out an application. You might actually get in. Now, that's kind of restrictive. You have to be an adult, you know, over 18. It's basically a program for single adults. You can't have any dependents with you. And you have to be willing to be alcohol and drug-free during the entire program. And you will be asked to contribute up to 30% of your income for that. But that's the news from Paige Smith. Let's see. Also, you've probably seen those ads in the Sentinel Metro recently, appeals for funds for the Homeless Services Center.
I guess they've been very successful in garnering donations, and they reported that there were $26,500 that have been donated thus far as a result of those ads. And I'm asked for a couple things. I asked for them to consider a late-night bus to the Army, which I spoke about earlier, and it doesn't look like anything's in the cards for that at this point in time, although that's badly needed.
Better hide deeper if you miss that bus, all you homeless folks out there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's not going to be much room for most of you because only 100 people can go to the Armory, and it's near capacity now, right, Beck?
It is very near capacity. However, since Ken Cole has reduced the number of people to be considered full to 100, it's far more humane than it's ever been. And with the new mats, clients are reporting that that's a lot more comfortable. The old mats were pretty darn thin. And so if you are up at the Army, I think, or have been up there before, I'm sure you'd appreciate the changes that have been made up there.
I think it's significant. Once that Armory fills up again, that kicks in the so-called winter shelter emergency exception to the camping ordinance, which means that sleeping tickets will be dismissed. Doesn't mean you won't get hassled, woken, moved on, and otherwise molested by police. But then later on, you can always get your ticket dismissed. Think of that. So what that means is that for those of you who might use the Armory and who might not, if you use it, it has the double benefit of filling it up, and once it's filled, in kicks that provision, which should actually happen next week sometime. Although, I think there are plenty of people who are going to need to use it, so there's no need to kind of stack the deck here.
It is true, though, that in good weather, and I know it's very cold out there, but we're in kind of a dry spell. Many, many people choose not to use the Armory and prefer to camp out in the woods rather than be with the restrictive hours of the Armory and you know, being awakened at 5 a.m. That's pretty cruel.
Does that wrap it up, Becky?
Yep, that's the report.
And it really almost wraps it up for Bathurst Cares Broad, says we have 3 or 4 minutes left, and I'm going to try to leave a minute or two early. So Uncle
no!
Ken, yeah, you got it, Uncle Kenneth.
That never happens.
I'm not ready.
The astounded voice of
Get
Uncle
your
Dennis.
Mic up.
Whoa, thank you.
Good to have a mic, Robert.
Yeah, repeating, we have only a few minutes left at Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and Uncle Dennis is going to get a couple of extra minutes to fumble around with his tapes here. But it's really a well-organized Earth First show once he gets it rolling, so I encourage you to stay tuned. A lot of stuff I haven't been able to play, including an interview with David Beauvais, attorney in Berkeley, about the explicit players trial, the those who perform in the nude and who are being hassled by Berkeley authorities, Berkeley, the great liberal city.
And I don't know, did you get to the exciting news about the ICORN defense being used recently?
You know, I didn't get to that, and we're going to be coming into that one on
Sunday.
That's right, Sunday, 11 o'clock in the morning, where ICORN was successfully used in misdemeanor trials up in Albany, California, in the eviction of the Albany folks out on the seashore, which you call it encampment that had been there for several years, which was removed by the city of Albany, and adding insult to injury, they gave him tickets for sleeping where they had to sleep, where they'd been removed to, and tried to drive them out of town. And there was a successful defense of that, as reported by Street Spirit editor Terry Messman. We're going to hear about that. We're going to hear reports of more beatings, I'm afraid. And these are eyewitness reports, people who were actually beaten. This isn't just I'm making it up so I can pad my figures, folks. I have to do some pretty heavy coaching to get these kinds of accounts on the air. And to those who have suffered retaliation because they've gone public, I express my sympathy to you, and I advise people, as I always do when they give these reports, that there is the risk that if they go public, they will be punished. And apparently, one person has.
On the other hand, you've had reports from Verna Hernandez, the recycler, who went very public with about complaints that she had about being harassed by authorities with chased by garbage trucks. I mean, bizarre thing. And she reports that since she went public, they're laying off her. So a lot of times it can work the other way. If you speak out and publicly, then sometimes you can have a good result that way.
Well, that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Give Dennis a couple moments to get together and get his tapes going. We're going to play an interview with another person who was beaten, and when Dennis has his tapes ready, we will fade out that interview, and we hope you will fade in again on Sunday when at 11 o'clock Bathrop Spears Broadsides resumes here at 96.3 FM. During the interim, call 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, if you have anything to report or if you want to get involved in the campaign to repeal the sleeping ban. Thanks for being with us.
About 22, I'm in front of the Coffee Roasting Company. I just had a conversation with two men, one of whom was, he had his nose broken. It's still, you can still tell by looking at the guy. There's a slight, there's a white patch up there. You had it rebroken, I guess, to put it back in place. And I'm not going to use any last names in this, but I'm talking to Mark and Scott. And I can either give a description of what happened, and maybe you can tell me if I make any errors in what I've said. Because you said you'd be a little bit hesitant about coming on tape yourself.
A little bit of hesitance, actually.
I like that. I like your accent, by the way, and I think that's appropriate. Apparently Sunday a week ago, around 2 in the morning, you were up near the UC Townhouse, which is a new building that occupies Cathcart and Pacific Corner. The two of you were up there. And Mark, you said that earlier, a moment before this incident happened, somebody passed by you and kind of made a threatening gesture?
Yes.
What kind of a gesture was it?
He's just running and acted like he was going to try and punch me in the face and then swerved at the last second.
Well-dressed person, homeless type person, who knows type person?
Fairly good-looking guy, you know, a little smaller than I was, you know.
About 5'10".
But his energy was coming from, you know, like he was running from some friends and going somewhere.
But then you
saw intentions.
Okay, and did he say anything?
No.
And then
smiled.
I see. And then Scott, you saw a coat on the ground, correct?
Yeah, I saw a coat on the ground, and me and my friend Mark, we picked it up, and some keys fell out, and I picked up the keys, and then two guys approached really aggressively and started accusing us of stealing their coat, which we didn't, and then we were trying to get away slowly, and then...
You said you reached out to hand him the keys?
Yes, and then I was trying to reach and hand him the keys, and then that's when he swung at me and punched me in the nose.
Broke your nose?
Broke my nose, and then I started to get out of there.
Can you say anything throughout this process? Like, did he call you any epithet?